Blog Talk Radio.
Above all powers, above all kings, above all nature and all created things, above all wisdom and all the ways of man, you were here before the world. Above all kingdoms, above all thrones, above all wonders the world has ever known, above all wealth and treasures of the earth, there's no way to measure what
you boys and girls, welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book.com. And I promised you last night that we ran out of time and we did that tribute to the, we read that little story about the mother who lost two sons in Nam, a husband and a brother-in-law in World War II, and a father in World War I. And we ran out of time to play Above All. And Above All is a song about sacrifice, and greater love hath no man. And when I see those GI crosses on at the cemeteries, each one was a crucifixion for country, for God and country, because the two are inseparable. It's like men and women in marriage. But anyway, should I open with something light or something heavy? I'll tell you what we'll do. Let me see if I can find it, and we'll lighten up of the show a little bit. And I do want to say that that song was dedicated to the Marines who were crucified in Berkeley, California, this week. And that Berkeley, it shouldn't be allowed to get off the hook. If I had my way, I would demand that they close the post office in Berkeley and let the communists pick up their mail in Moscow. And I tell you what else I would do. I don't see enough Americans getting angry about this, and they should. And I heard a guy today, I was speaking to a guy today who was lamenting about the NAFTA and the highway from Mexico to Canada and the fact that teachers in school cannot report a head lice nor send children home that have it. They cannot tell their parents that they have head lice. How's that? Can you imagine what else they don't tell the parents? Anyway, yeah, it's going to be called the Parent of Fools at Teachers Meetings in the future. But anyway, and he was when I told him what was taking place in Berkeley, he couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it, and he was going home to check it out. And what I would do for Berkeley is I would have the biggest peaceful demonstration that Berkeley could not stand. I would like to see about 1 million Americans shopping at Berkeley and buying nothing. Just go into all the stores and browse. I would put them all out of business. I would get them all. If you if you're not a pro-American, and you must pay the price, I would get them all. I would get them on their own terms. I would reduce them to a rabble, a rubble. So, having said that, you know what? I'm going to give you a stairwell first.
Hi, you boys and girls. I'm back. Somebody sent me this, and I'm going to read it with you, to you. And if you ever want to see pictures of 911, in case you forgot, go to www.spiritofamericaparty.com. And I have a lot of 911 photos that maybe you've seen. Many of you have seen, but there may be some that you haven't seen. Nothing gory. I stayed away from the gory stuff. And believe me, there was a lot of that. Somebody sent me this, and I'm going to read it to you. They sent me all of those photos that I have on my website. Many of them. And they entitled their story, Meet Me at the Stairwell. You say you will never forget where you were when you heard the news on September the 11th, 2001. Neither will I. I was on the 110th floor in a smoke-filled room with a man who called his wife to say goodbye. I held his finger steady as he dialed. I gave him the peace to say, Honey, I am not going to make it, but it is okay, I am ready to go. I was with his wife when he called as she fed breakfast to their children. I held her up as she tried to understand his words and as she realized he wasn't coming home that night. I was at the stairwell of the 23rd floor when a woman cried out to me for help. I have been knocking on the door of your heart for 50 years, I said. Of course, I will show you the way home. Only believe in me now. I was at the base of the building with the priest ministering to the injured and devastated souls. I took him home to tend his flock in heaven. He heard my voice and answered. I was on all four of those planes in every seat with every prayer. I was with the crew as they were overtaken. I was in the very hearts of the believers there, comforting and assuring them that their faith had saved them. I was in Texas, Virginia, California, Michigan, Afghanistan. I was standing next to you when you heard the terrible news. Did you sense me? I want you to know that I saw every face, I knew every name. Though not all know me, some met me for the first time on the 86th floor. Some sought me with their last breath. Some couldn't hear me calling to them through the smoke and flames. Come to me this way. Take my hand. Some chose for the final time to ignore me, but I was there. I did not place you in the tower that day. You may not know why, but I do. However, if you were there in that explosive moment in time, would you have reached for me? September 11th of 2001 was not the end of the journey for you, but someday your journey will end, and I will be there for you as well. Seek me now, while I may be found, then at any moment you know you are ready to go. I will be in the stairwell of your final moments. That's pretty nice, isn't it? And in my favorite quotation, they went on, says, you know, 60 seconds, stop whatever you're doing and take this opportunity. Stop and think and appreciate God's power in your life. And one of Jesus' sayings is, if you are ashamed of me before men, I will be ashamed of you before my Father. A little church music, please. Hi, you boys and girls, and welcome to the Spirit of America, a Party, and the Spirit of America Party, a Book. And the bad news is, if you haven't bought anything, it's Saint Valentine's Eve. Tomorrow is February the 14th in the year of our Lord, 2008. And it may be high noon for you. And let me just give you a tip. I don't give tips to guys who are courting, but I have to tell you this one because everybody walks into it blind. My friends, I beg you, do not give cut flowers. Do you know what the word cut implies? Cut, like in the movies? It's the end of the show. The curtain is coming down. And the word in French, fin, comes up on the screen. Finished. Do not give cut flowers. If you want to win, fair lady, you have to give a love in a flower that will grow and grow, a flower that has beauty and roots. You have to give the whole bush. Do not give cut flowers. I'll tell you what's going to happen. It's going to be the same thing as your relationship. It's going to look bright in the beginning. And then it is going to fade. And then it is going to wilt. And then it's going to die. And you and the flowers will be in the garbage in 14 days. Now, while I was thinking about giving you this warning, I got a flashback about when I was first courting and sparking. And I was going with my wife. She's my wife now. Or as she likes to call herself, the Bride of Frankenstein. So I'm gonna reminisce a little bit, and I hope you get a chuckle out of this, because I was getting a chuckle as I was rehearsing the story. You know how hard it is when you're first dating. You know, you're not on solid ground, and you're trying to make a good impression, and you're trying to cut your heifer out of the herd. My wife had a lot of girlfriends, and it was very hard. I wanted to settle down and have my socks done. And I'm just mentioning socks because I heard a talk show yesterday, and the woman was saying, after a while you get used to them. And, you know, you have to break them of some of their bad habits. When they come in, they just throw their socks on the floor anywhere. And I said, you know what? I was never that inconsiderate. I always threw mine in the corner. And it was always the same corner. So, and one night I asked the question, you know, I said, I've been happily married now for X amount of years. More years than some people have lived. And I said, but I can't figure out one thing. I just can't figure it out. How does the bed get made every morning? And how do the socks get back in the sock drawer? And I guess I am the last of the male chauvinist pigs. But I got to tell you something. I'm a faithful pig. And I don't pig out. I was with my brother one night after a business meeting, and we went to a bar for a drink. And there was a girl sitting at the bar, and she started to make a pass at me, and I ignored her. And my brother is nudging me. Hey, she's making a pass at you. Don't you know she's making a pass at you? And I just said, yeah, I know. And then we finished the drink and I left. And he could never get over that, because he wasn't that type of guy, you know. He thinks he's a bee. He goes from flower to flower. Me, I'm a solitary bee. But anyway, and that's the only way, that's the only bee to be. You do not, not to be. You do not want to be not to be. And if you don't believe me, you just ask Bill Clinton how his face feels when Hillary loses this election and all her sacrifice has been for nothing. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a 911 call. President down. We have a president down. Yeah. But anyway, so I had to cut my wife out from the herd. And here I was, I was just building a business and I was trying to settle down. And I needed somebody to do the socks. And it's not true. I was crazy about her. As a matter of fact, I cried at my wedding. But anyway, so we're just getting familiar with each other. She doesn't know what kind of guy I am. She doesn't know my family has a crazy side to it. And so we're at this shindig, and her friends are all snobs. They're all snobs. And when I got introduced as Suzanne's boyfriend to her girlfriend's mother, the woman stood on her toes and looked down on me and said, "She's too good for you." Now, this woman never met me before. It doesn't know what I do for a living, who I am, what religion I am. She doesn't know. She hasn't even heard the first rumors. And she pulled that stunt on me. And here I am. I'm trying to impress a fair maiden on what a chivalrous knight I am, and I'm saying to myself, which one is your husband, lady? Because I'm going to beat the crap out of him right in front of you. Imagine that poor guy, right? He didn't do anything. He's married. He's got to live with her. He's got to live with, what's that one's name? Cruella Deville, the one that kidnapped all those Dalmatians? Yeah. So anyway, so then, like I was, and my wife, everything goes over her head. She never picks up digs or jabs. So she is Mother Teresa. You can't say anything. You really got to drop an anvil on her toe to hurt her. And of course, she is up in the air like all angels. And so we were all sitting on a dais. I don't know why we were on the dais. I can't remember. But I can remember another one of her girlfriends had a boyfriend who was an insurance salesman on his second marriage. He must have tortured the first one beyond repair. And he was now coveting a younger flock. So all these guys are real smart, real nasty, you know. And you know who they remind me of? They remind me of John DeMonkey. You know John DeMonkey on Communist Central, the only network that you have to denounce your race and religion? And you have to go to the cemetery and spit on the graves of your ancestors if you want to get a job there. John DeMonkey, he's got that snotty type of humor. And the other guy is his mistress, Claudette Colbert. And the guy that wears a wristband. And, puts down America. They got the flag and the eagle. But when nobody's looking, they spit on it. And that's what these guys reminded me of. They all needed a, as a friend of mine would describe, a size 29 thrashing with a Louisville slugger. And this guy says to me, he turns around to me in front of all these people, and I know none of these people. So like I'm the boy toy, the boy to be toyed with. And he says, "What the hell are you wearing? You smell like a French whore." How's that, right? I don't know this guy from Adam. Well, he's entertaining his friends at my expense. And I said, "You're right. You're absolutely right." I was coming down the West Side Highway. There was a guy hitching. I pulled over to give him a ride. He got in the car. The son of a bitch tried to kiss me. I threw him out of the car. And just as I threw him out of the car, he sprayed me with something. And then I leaned over to this guy, and I said, "Can you smell it?" And he leaned over to smell it, and I kissed him. And that was the end of the conversation. He fell in love. Yeah. And I relished in that. There was only one time I enjoyed something more, and I was with my kids in a station wagon. And it was a rainy day. It had just, the sun had just come out, and there was all kinds of puddles. And there was a guy driving a car alongside me, and in a two-lane, like a two-lane road. And I was coming up. I had all my kids in the station wagon, and I was coming up to a big puddle, a huge puddle, a giant puddle, a mini Mississippi. And this guy on the left, I'm signaling to get over, and he won't let me in. And his wife is sitting with her arm out the window looking at me. And I said, "Screw it, I'm going through it." And I went through this puddle, and I created a tsunami. I thought I seen guys surfing in it. And this thing just arched over and right into this guy's wife's window. And that was another day when I struck a blow for freedom. So having said that, and then, of course, my wife went away. She went with her friends on a trip to Hawaii, and I had to wait for her to come back. And finally, we did get together, and we started to a date. And now all my children have 25% of the crazy genes. Because on my side of the family, my mother was considered a wacky. But and that I told you before, I'm a mama's boy, and I was the oldest, so I could do no wrong. And to give you an example, my wife lived on high on a hill, and I'll tell you where it was. It was called Fort George. It used to be a Revolutionary War fort, and as kids, a lot of kids used to play in the fort. And it overlooked the East River, right where the East River joins the Hudson River, in a place called Washington Heights. And in the wintertime, the snow and the wind comes off that river, and I'm not exaggerating when I tell you that my father-in-law slept in a bedroom on the fifth floor of a building that was the highest point at that point, and they used to go in the morning and take the snow off his blanket because the storm windows had a slight leak in them. And he used to sleep in his underwear. How's that? How's that? He was a great guy. You would have loved him. You would have loved him. And I could tell you a bunch of stories about him, but we'll save that for another day. We'll go back to Courtney and Sparking. So, like I said, my mother was, I was a mama's boy. I was supposed to inherit 40 Shades of Green. I'm Irish, and there was land in Ireland, and I, being the oldest at the time, I was told that the Irish law was that all the property goes to the oldest. So you know that made me real popular with my brothers and sister. But I always thought I'd be fair, but they didn't wait for that. They all got their own lawyers. And let me tell you, my friends, you know it better than I do. When it comes to money and greed, they go together. They go together. So I started to tell you. Oh, yeah. So I used to give my wife a ride to work so she wouldn't have to take the subway. And I would pick her up in front of her house. And this cold, snowy, sleet-driven Monday morning, I was late. And the phone rang in my house. And as my wife explains it, she was in her nurse's uniform. And at that time, they didn't have pants. They had to wear dress, and the wind was blowing her legs frozen, and she's in a payphone, and my mother answered the phone and went, "Hello." My grandson is 1 year old, and his mother, my daughter, has taught him to impersonate the Queen of England. He can't speak yet, but he can make certain sounds. And when she says, "Do the Queen," he goes, "Hello." And that's what my mother sounded like when she answered the phone. "Hello." My mother's from Scotland. And Suzanne says, "Is Tom there? He's supposed to pick me up." And my mother said, "Tom is having his porridge." And you know what? That story gets told at least twice a year. And then I usually get at the 4 a.m. Wake up with the frying pan with no snooze alarm. So, courting and sparking, that was one of the things that we did. And I'm flashing back to an uncle of mine who was a bachelor. And he used to go with a southern girl, and she was crazy about him, and she was beautiful. And he worked in the Hotel New Yorker, and he was an immigrant. He had come from Scotland as a young lad and started to work in the American system. And he learned pretty quick. Used to play soccer for a team called the Shamrock Celtics. They used to play at Jasper Oval, which is part of Harlem now. You know, the Irish Echo, the office for the Irish Echo was in Harlem. Harlem used to be all Irish. And as a matter of fact, I can remember taking the Amsterdam Avenue bus going to school at 155th Street. And all of the bars still had, they were all black, but they still had the shamrocks on the windows. But my uncle, he was a good man. But he had a drinking problem. And he was what we call a periodical. And if you're not into drinking, you probably don't know that a periodical is somebody that goes on like a two-week bender. And then he could be sober for 6 months. He won't touch a drop. But when he goes, he goes. And this woman was crazy about my uncle. My uncle was a good-looking guy. And he was a debonair, and he had a he knew how to treat people. Well, he worked. He was a working man. He earned his living with tips, so he was one of the biggest tippers. He took care of people like himself. And my mother would try and talk him into getting married. And she's not going to wait around much longer. And now's the time. You better make your move. She's the right girl for you. And he would get all worked up. He was going to get married. And then just before he said yes, he would go on a bender. And I'll never forget that he used to come over to the house every night before he went to work for a cup of tea. And we would get a history lesson. We would get a lesson in human relations. And he used to have a saying, "Faint heart never won fair lady." And it was ironic because he had a faint heart. And he didn't win fair lady. And that was sad. But that's life, right? Everybody is born in diapers, and everybody gets one go-around. And if you don't make the most of it, then you have to accept what's left. So, now having said that, I started off with the Valentine's Day. So I'll give you a little Valentine music. And we'll have a chuckle. When I did get married, one of my other stories that comes up at least twice a year is two free checks. My mother never had a checking account. And when she banked, she would get two blank checks from the bank, you know, that she could use. I don't know how she worked it out, but I always assumed that growing up that, you know, if you have this account at the bank, you can get two free checks. So we get married, and my wife has to pay a bill, and my mother says to her, "Just go to the bank and tell them to give you the two free checks." And I'm standing there like a jerk. I'm saying, "Sure, yeah, that's what you do. Everybody knows that." So my poor wife went to the bank, and she said, "I'm here for the two free checks." And the whole bank cracked up, and everybody was pointing at him and laughing, you know. And she was able to get out the door without opening it. And to this day, we're punished for the two free checks. So, and that reminds me of a joke that a guy told me about the woman who was overdrawn at the bank. And she said, "I can't understand how I'm overdrawn. I got six checks left." Okay, so we'll give you a love song, and then we'll be back. And welcome to the Spirit of America Party. I didn't want to get into this, but the thought will escape my Alzheimer's mind, so I'm going to say it now. I happened to be watching at lunchtime the Spanish Inquisition of Pelota, and that's baseball. Yeah, baseball. Los Mets. And I'm watching these phony Congress bastards wasting the public's time, going after a steroid use among ball players, holding hearings. Do you know, it's coming up on 7 years since Bin Laden killed us, and we haven't killed him back. Yet tonight, the Israeli Mossad has taken out the man responsible for the Beirut barracks bombing, I believe. Okay, his name is Mugnir. And I got him on my website, and if you looked at this guy, he could pass for an American any day of the week. I think he even has blue eyes. But the Israeli intelligence took him out in Lebanon. Praise be to God. And I hope that the only thing that's left is just a little bit of tissue for DNA testing. And that is good news. My question is, how come the CIA didn't get him? Why are we paying the CIA? What have they done to get anybody? The only one they got was Scooter Libby. And they had to send their boss, a woman, a self-appointed chief of the CIA, sent her husband, Joe Wilson, or as he's known on his doorbell, Wilson the Spy, to go to Niger to get the goods on George Bush? Are you kidding me? And that's what one of those congressmen said today. there was about two decent congressmen up there that tried to help Clemente. Now, Clemente, my guess is he did steroids. And the only reason I would say he had a chance of not being implicated, but this guy says he also gave his wife a shot. And I don't hear anything from the wife. I don't hear any cries of indignation from the wife. So, but the guy who was blowing the whistle on everybody, who was the drug pusher, he's a real rat. He, as a matter of fact, if you look up the word Democrat in the dictionary, his picture is there. That guy is a real scum rat. And not only is that, not only is he a scum rat, but in my mind, he's a rogue cop. And there's none worse. There's nobody worse than a lying son of a bitch who held on to evidence for 5 years. Now, my question is, why did he hold on to the gauze pad with the blood on it and the hypodermic needles? My answer is, he did it because down the road he was going to blackmail him. And this guy is a real rat. But there's a bigger rat. And you know who that is? It's the guy that's the head of the committee that was doing the hearing today. I call him Oil Can Harry. He's Mighty Mouse's arch enemy. That's Henry Waxman. Wherever there's a foul deed to be committed, you will find Henry Waxman. Henry Waxman, to me, reminds me of the German judge at Nuremberg. Not the German judge, not the American judge at Nuremberg who hanged the Germans for war crimes, but the German judge who hanged fellow Germans for trying to kill Hitler. And Henry Waxman reminds me of that judge. And all I can remember was what that judge said when he sentenced his victims, those true Germans. He sentenced them to be hanged by piano wire on meat hooks. And he only said one word, Moida! Moida! And I'll never forget that. And you know where he is today. He's in a rotisserie in hell. And Henry Waxman is an axeman for the Democrat Party. And now let me tell you, 16,000 American boys and girls OD on drugs every year. And we have not done anything but take drug money at the presidential level. The rehab rate from heroin use is 1%. Body bags are already put aside for the future dopers of America. We now have two generations of junkies in the United States where there was none. Where the only people in history that were doing drugs that we could identify were Edgar Allan Poe, Field Marshal Goering, and Gene Krupa. And weed belonged to jazz musicians downtown New York and nowhere else. And today, we are two generations of junkies. And the tab for drug use is in the trillions, because 80% of the crime is drug-related. And here, these self-righteous, bribe-taking sons of bitches are going after a baseball player. A baseball player. We have a World War III in progress, and they're going to hold hearings about baseball players getting shot in the ass with steroids. And they're not sure if it's steroids or B12. My friends, our country is gone. It is lost. It is absolutely gone under. You could start playing the funeral dirge now. We are finished as a nation. We don't make anything. We don't even know what's made in the USA. You put six people in a room and you throw out some manufacturers' names. They think everything is made here. They have no idea. You've got politicians who want to seize Exxon oil, like Hugo Chavez has done. You've got Chinese people drilling for oil off of Cuba, and Cuba's the first step. They'll inch their way out into the Gulf until they're off of Florida. And who are they going to bribe in the White House to see that they can complete the mission? Who's going to sell secrets next week? We're in trouble, my friends. We're in trouble. And that guy Lynch that put that show on that hearing today, Lynch, the Lynch coat of arms, has three fleur-de-lilies on them. And that guy, his coat of arms should have three leeches, because he's the biggest phony that ever walked the face of the earth, and he is the Rosie O'Donnell of the Lynch clan. He's a disgrace. And there's a lot of Fenians that spin in their graves when they see that their heirs are a flag-burning, baby-killing communists. And that's what they are. So, having said that, we're fighting the wrong war with the wrong people. And the one thing that I'm going to look forward to is, and I got to tell you this, because it's the first time I've heard it since Vietnam. McCain said he was tortured by Cubans in the Hanoi Hilton. And he looks forward to the day when Cuba falls and he can go identify the guy who tortured him. And I hope he does too. And I hope he gets Alzheimer's. And I hope he bombs him twice. And we owe a lot of payback to a lot of people. And it's time we started counting coup. So hang in there. I'll cheer you up.
Gets Alzheimer's. I didn't mean that. I should have said if McCain gets Alzheimer's. I'm just thinking about the Democrat lineup, and when this race began, it looked like it was going to be Hillary and Obama. Now it looks like it's ending up as Obama and Hillary. And I don't think Hillary will take a second position on the ticket. But you never know. You never know. But then again, if I was Obama, I wouldn't be eating any shiny apples. But the choice of the vice president for the Republicans, especially if McCain is the nominee, and it looks like he's going to be, is very, very important. The choice of the vice president is twice as important as the president in my mind. And I told you why, because one bullet can move a vice president to the president in an instant. And we've all seen it happen before. We've seen many attempts, and go all the way back to Harry Truman, when Puerto Rican terrorists tried to assassinate him, and they got on the White House lawn and they killed two cops, and Bill Clinton pardoned them for their failure. Yeah, I wonder how much that cost, that pardon. Does votes count as money? Is votes bigger than money? But anyway, I know that one thing I feel confident about, McCain has been under fire. As a matter of fact, he was shot down, and he sat on a plane that was on fire on the deck of a carrier. So he has been tested under fire, and he's been tested under torture. And for that alone, for that deed alone, for his five-year sacrifice, he's entitled to 4 years in the White House. And he is the only candidate that has a DD 214. And when I see the scum at Berkeley stabbing America in the heart and in the eyes, and also in Boulder, Colorado, and in Toledo, I want a warrior as president. And I just hope that he picks very wisely a vice president. And I hope he doesn't pick somebody for popular appeal. I hope he picks somebody that can do the job in case something happens to him. And I hope that guy has a DD 214, but I don't think we'll see that because there's not too many. When I was growing up as a kid, on the weekends, my neighborhood looked like a military base. Everybody was home on leave from every branch of the service imaginable, including there was a few guys left in a merchant marine. We don't have a merchant marine anymore. So, yeah, we don't have a merchant marine. We don't have a lot of things. We don't even have oil, yet we're sitting on it. But we don't want to disturb the eggs of the piping plover. But you know what? We're not going to need oil because we're going to be a second-rate nation and we won't need it. We'll be pushing our cars down the street. Everybody's waiting for alternative energy. That's 50 years away, my friends, alternative energy. 50 years away. So, and let me tell you, when the guy invents a car that can run on water, water will be $5 a gallon. And it's on its way, thanks to the help of the latte suckers. Yeah. Do you know that the Starbucks wouldn't give a coffee to the Marines? Did you know? It's not only Berkeley, California. There's a lot of communists in this country, and they call themselves liberals, but liberal is too kind a word. Communist, camo, pinko, wackos is more like it. And if this wasn't the country's airwaves, I could turn the color room blue with a description. And speaking of blues, I thought I would play for you. You don't know this because this has never been released because the New York Times doesn't know about it. How to Hurt an American. But I happen to have the music that is played during waterboard torture. And I thought you'd like to hear the tune that was played while Khalid
Sheikh Mohammed was getting his water wings. Okay, we're going to close. We've got a minute left. We're going to close with the Harptones, My One and Only Love.
Tells me.